One of the most important things I learned is to be prepared. Build your castle before the enemy comes over the hill. Part of that is proper business and estate planning. There's a lot of different information out there in the world where you can get various types of organizations to provide various degrees of protection from various types of potential problems. Some of these programs are quite good. Many of them are very well trained. Others, there is a lack of training and they just give you basic information and it's up to you to go out and figure out how to use it. I recommend that you search out proper training and support so that you can best provide for yourself, your family, and your business. Just as important as correct structure is thorough training on how to integrate the structure and have the support necessary to enforce the power of the structure if it's attacked. I'm going to tell you about a couple of incidents that I've been involved in. I worked with a company at Tacoma, Washington, where the city business license inspectors decided that they wanted to participate in our business. My security staff observed this man come in and start taking pictures of our offices and operations. They asked him who he was, and at first he said he was an architect doing a study of the building, and it was a landmark building, and that wouldn't seem out of line. Asked him to please leave and get permission before he did his study, and at that point he admitted that he was a city business license inspector, a special policeman, and he was there conducting an investigation. My security staff gave me a call, and I asked them to ask him if he had a warrant, which of course he did not have. Here he was inside our facilities, conducting an investigation without a warrant. At that time, I suggested that they invite him to leave, and I went down to that location. When I got there, there was a bit of a discussion going on, because the man's Polaroid camera had taken quite a few pictures, and my security chief had confiscated several of them. I then joined the conversation, and my security chief stepped back and just watched. I asked the man again if he had a warrant. He said he did not. At that point, I asked him to please leave. He refused to leave on the grounds that he wanted his pictures. At that point, I told him he was under arrest, and I told my security chief to take him into custody. I got on my cell phone and called 911, and the Tacoma Police Department answered, and I explained that I had just made a citizen's arrest for trespass and possibly burglary, and that the man we had arrested claimed that he worked for the city, and they might want to send someone out to see if they could get this matter resolved. As a result, 7 Tacoma police officers showed up and lined up in a row outside our section of the building. One of them, who was a little bit different from the rest in that he did not have a name tag and he had wraparound sunglasses, which in international law says that he is not acting in his own capacity, he's acting only in the capacity of the principal, in this case the city, stepped up to the dividing line and asked permission to come into our part of the building. I granted permission for him to come into our part of the building, and he says, "Hi, I'm from the city of Tacoma. How can we help you?" I responded and explained that we had caught a trespasser, and we had had to arrest him because he refused to leave, and that the man claimed that he worked for them, and that we didn't have proper jail facilities, and rather than keep him chained to a radiator in the basement while we were doing administrative negotiations with the city to find out whether or not he could properly be there, it might be more appropriate for them to take him into their custody pending an outcome of the administrative negotiations with the city. Police officer said, "I understand exactly what you're saying, and we will accept custody." At that point, I instructed the security chief to bring over the prisoner. He took him by the arm, walked him over. I says, "At this time, I place the prisoner in your custody." He says, "I understand and I accept custody," and told him to walk outside our section of the building and stand there with the other police officers. The special officer then turned back to me and says, "Will there be anything further?" And I says, "No, we'll be in contact with your offices administratively to determine where we're to go from here." He said, "Thank you very much," and turns and walks away. About that time, the business license inspector says, "Well, what about my pictures?" And this officer told him, "Shut up." The other officers surrounded him and walked him out of the building. When you know the law and you properly do your procedure, it's amazing how much power the people really have. A little background on administrative remedies and how I came to study that. After my study to find out how to enforce the laws that seem to be taken away from us in the legislature and those backroom meetings, I did an extensive study on civil rights lawsuits. The first couple that I filed were dismissed by the federal court on the grounds of failure to exhaust administrative remedies. Well, it only took me about 3 times before I woke up and said maybe they're trying to tell me something, and went and did an extensive study of administrative remedies. I found out that there are 2 basic types of administrative remedies leading into a potential litigation situation. One is administrative remedies to determine what the facts are and what law is applicable. The other administrative remedies has to do with damages and submitting a tort claim to the corporate body's risk management office so they have an opportunity to settle with you before you ever file a lawsuit. Every state has a Tort Claims Act where it explains the procedures for that. The federal government has a similar tort claims procedure codified in Title 28. After several years of study and joining the American Bar Association, I had the opportunity to get some of their journals. And there was a very, very enlightening article that compared what they called administrative law with what they called the old common law. It is just simply law that is common to all of us. It's been around for generations and millennia. If you want to go back in history and look it up, for those with a scriptural background, you'll find it in the Old Testament. It says, "If ye have a dispute with thy brother, go to him first in private and try and resolve the problem. If you can't get the problem resolved privately between the two of you, you then take a couple of witnesses and have the witnesses help you try and resolve your differences. If, after trying all of those procedures, you absolutely cannot come to a resolution, then and only then do you go to the judges." The American Bar Association article paralleled the procedures of common law and the procedures of administrative law, and they are virtually identical. However, the common law is not written, so we have nowhere to go look it up per se and be able to study it. And that was why the government decided that to make it available to the people in a structure the people could understand, they would statutize the common law, and then they hid it by calling it administrative law. In federal law, the Federal Administrative Procedures Act is located at Title 5 of the United States Code. That is a general Administrative Procedures Act, which provides an outline and foundation. You'll also find more detailed applications of common law as administrative law in many different agency statutes and regulations. You look at the IRS code and regulations, and it tells you what the administrative procedures are to deal with various types of activities that you may be involved in or the agents may be involved in. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act takes the common law and statutizes it in commercial dealings where there's credit involved. Federal Aviation Regulation Act and the Federal Aviation Regulations are all administrative procedures law, which is a detailed step-by-step outline of how to apply common law to any potential disputes that may arise under that law form. The Department of Transportation, for example, has a huge array of statutes and regulations explaining how to apply common law procedures through administrative processes to determine what the rights and duties of the parties are and to determine what, if anything, remains in controversy after you go to them privately, after you go to them with a witness, generally called an administrative law judge or administrative hearings officer, and then, and only then, do you go to a court and invoke its judicial powers to resolve any remaining disputes.